This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio, and already there are some smiles in the studio, as there should be, because what a result it was on the weekend. I'm joined by the Back of the Nest podcast, and what a show we have in store for you. We're going to be talking about that brilliant away win to West Ham on the weekend, and that good vibe, well, that will continue into the international break. Lovely to go into a break like that off the back of a brilliant away win. And if that wasn't enough, we're going to be talking to Sean Derry, who's the current academy coach, just about how it's going for him, and also talking about Crystal Palace's start this season, and looking at those, well, Zaha once again dominating the headlines, dominating the game. He's had quite a bit to say on social media about his agent and people making stories out of nothing, and about his head being all over the place because of transfer speculation. It is going to be one show indeed, but as always, you can have your say because it's your team, your voice. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 7020 558. This is the Crystal Palace Fan Show. Well, we have to start at the top. Crystal Palace beating West Ham on the weekend. Not many pundits, not many people were picking Crystal Palace for the win. As James quickly turns his attention to me, our eyes met then, and he's like, yeah, go on. Mention that you was one of them. Say you was one of them.
Both of us.
Yeah, I know that you two obviously were predicting Palace for the win. Good on you. I'm glad you did. But West Ham, a great start to the season for them. We just had the West Ham fan show. They were talking about what they felt. They felt like they deserved a draw, but they actually gave a lot of credit to Palace. They said they came, they performed and executed their tactics absolutely to perfection. Roy sent them out to do a job. They done that. 3 points for them. No arguments with the VAR. They was gutted with a Rice handball. Let's get the Crystal Palace perspective. What did you two make of it? DR, I'll start with you.
I mean, if you look at the game, last year, I think it was last season, when we went to West Ham, we performed pretty well in the first half. And then when it came to the second half, that's when we collapsed. So that's just one thing that I was looking forward to going into the game. Can we maintain our good play for the whole 90 minutes? And in the first half, I thought we'd done pretty well in terms of containing West Ham and not allowing them to have that many chances. When they did have the chances, it was from our very silly mistakes. But we'll talk about Gaeta in a bit, but credit to him. He was just an absolute machine at goal. Like, he saved us once again. Without him, I don't think we would have got all 3 points, to be fair. And then the mentality of coming back after being 1-0 down away from home against West Ham, who are doing good so far this season. They were fourth before the game started. It's just massive. And I was actually shocked in a way. I wasn't really expecting us to turn around like that. I thought we'll concede a silly goal and it'll be all over. Maybe we could draw, but winning it away from home in the manner that we did was just a shock to me, and credit to the players really, because we've slated them about character all season long, and this time they did actually turn up and deliver.
Just we're also joined by James Howard. Just before we get James's thoughts, DR, would you say for you, I know the Man United was a huge result, but this was your performance of the season so far, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I'll say that. I think United and the West Ham game is very close in terms of, you look at United game, we defended absolutely brilliantly for the whole 90 minutes. But the West Ham, it sounds weird, but the West Ham one, in a way, was more of a shock. I think it's because the way that we went 1-0 down. And if you look at our fixtures against West Ham in the past, we don't really tend to get that many results against them. So I feel like this one was a bigger shock than the United one, in a way.
James, a bigger shock, but maybe arguably one of the best performances on the season. The smiles are being flaunted in the studio. How did you feel after the game on the weekend?
I'm still feeling it now. I'm absolutely over the moon. I mean, I was punching my fist when I walked in here because I'm still happy about it. And we've got, you know, 2 weeks to gloat about it again.
Always so, nice when you go into the international break off the win, ain't it?
Absolutely. I agree with DR. Personally, I thought we had a very good first half. I thought we were good at passing. I thought we knocked the ball around pretty well, very slick. I think we still, you know, had a couple of half chances. I think James McCarthy and Zaha trickery that set up possibly Schlupp or someone, and it was a soft attempt, but it was cleared off the line. And then it was up backs against the wall for some time in the game in the second half. We had to get our back into the game, and we did. And it was fortunate because of the handball incident. But it you know, it's we were still looking positive and we still had our chances. And then from that stage onwards, I just thought, we're going to win this. This is always happens to us. We get an equaliser and then, you know, we get the winner in the last few minutes or last 5 or 10 minutes, and that's what we did.
Well, Crystal Palace have developed a knack for scoring goals very late. The Man United won, the West Ham won, but it was well onside. There was no... I mean, I know VAR played its part, luckily, because they said disallowed go at the start, but it was well onside.
I thought it was offside. I'll be like before the VAR.
But I mean, now you've seen it. Yeah.
I mean, at first I thought it was offside, and it just shows why VAR is needed. Mm. I know Nick's not here, but we'll talk about him. We'll talk to him later on in the show. But it's just the fine margins like that. Some people argue that yes, it's ruining the game. If it's that close, then it shouldn't be offside. But he was offside, and you just don't see it with the naked eye. At first, when I was like, oh, they're just checking VAR, it's still offside, because they did show a couple of angles and it did look like it. But credit to VAR.
Well, this is it. Sorry, James, I know you want to get in here, but, you know, we're very quick to moan as football fans and we say, oh, VAR, it's spoiling the spectacle. But it's moments like this. It's still very early on in the season, but wherever Palace end up, you know, those two extra points could be vital to where they finish, maybe verging on Europe somewhere else. You never know how a season's going to play out. This is why DR pointed it there, what VAR was in for, because you've just come in punching in the fist in the air, James, buzzing into the studio, smiles. Had it been 1-1, it could have been a different hour, couldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is I'm absolutely for VAR, because we've now had years of criticism of officials, whether it's managers, players, pundits, commentators on TV, radio, they're constantly criticising mistakes. And now we've got proof of if a mistake has happened and we can rectify that. And I think it's, for this particular situation, I think it's fantastic, because you've got proper evidence that shows you that it was a clear goal that was onside. And no one can blame anyone. I mean, we've still got the situation of the ruling on the handball, that kind of thing. But as far as I'm concerned, VAR was needed, especially for this type of situation, because we were wasting so much time, you know, with pundits criticising officials, that it had to happen, because it's happening in other sports and it has happened for many years in cricket, rugby, tennis.
Yeah, I think we definitely needed to catch up. It's so vital because, you know, like DR said, and he's a Palace fan, he wants it to be a goal, he wants the 3 points, but very quickly, to the naked eye, he thought it was offside. Yeah. So we're not having a go at the linesman getting it wrong, but now it's in place to say, look, we can overturn it, we can overrule it, it was actually onside, it was actually a goal. And to credit to, I mean, only two West Ham fans on a West Ham fan show, they said, no arguments, it was onside, we can't argue about it, it doesn't matter how close, we know it is very close, but it's onside.
And also, when you look at the end of the season, it's always so tight.
At
the last game of the season, you could always move up a couple places. And that couple places, it doesn't seem too big to us, but that's a financial thing. If you move 100%. Up one or two places, then you could earn an extra £4 million. And we talk about how it's a business. And I feel like every game matters. And that's why having VAR there, even this earlier on in the season, it does matter, you know, for them getting the correct decision.
Yeah, and like you say, add additional to that, there's too much money involved in football now. Mm. If it comes down to the point on the last game of the season that 2 points and we're relegated, then you have to say that these 3 points stopped us from getting relegated. I'm not saying we'll be in a relegation battle, but that's the point I want to make, is that, you know, it could be the difference between getting relegated and losing £100+ million because of an incorrect decision.
Well, hold on a minute, James. Let's not talk about relegation because it's only 8 games in, but we want positivity and happy on this show. I mean, it's played 14 points. Arsenal are in third with 15. Leicester are in the top four with 14. Big wins away at Man United, West Ham. We're looking upwards. We're not looking down. Surely they are.
Yeah, exactly. You've got City next. If you beat City, you're second.
Well, there you go. We've already done the other Manchester side. This is it, you know. But let's talk about that, because how good can this team be? Or are you still not sure? Because, you know, after the brilliant victories, Man United, West Ham, we're talking about, we know we get the inconsistent games and we get the poor, sloppy defeats. What have you seen of this team now? Are we going to see more days like the one we did against West Ham, or more negative days? Because we're not quite sure where we are with this team. We constantly talk about Roy Hodgson on this show. But again, it's another result. And we have to give him props as well, don't we? Because they were well-drilled on the weekend. You know, they performed, they executed the game plan to perfection. This was a typical Roy Hodgson victory, and it's another 3 points. He has to get a lot of the credit, doesn't he, DR?
I think he does. And even before the game, when I saw the lineup, I actually, some people were annoyed in a way that Max Meyer and Camarasa didn't start. But I gave, you know, I was like, Roy, I understand what you're doing once again by putting McCarthy in for Luka. I mean, what people have to realise is that there's a balance, and in terms of how we defend, you need to make sure that you have the right players to attack and also defend in midfield. And by him putting McCarthy there, it was more of a like swap with Luka, and it worked out pretty well. McCarthy hasn't played. That was his first start. I think that might be in his second start for us. I think he played in the cup as well. But he was brilliant on the day. And considering that before he joined us, he's hardly played any game due to injuries, unfortunate injuries. He was brilliant. And the way that Royce implemented his ideas into the squad by including players like McCarthy and also McArthur, both of them started, it worked out pretty well, I thought, in midfield. We were very compact. And as I said, they didn't create that many chances. And when they did do, it was from our little silly mistakes. And I feel like that happens now and then, regardless of how good you're playing, it's still football.
Yeah, going back to your point, Charlie, about, you know, where can Roy take this team? Well, I believe that he's come out in the press, obviously, this week and said, I really need to get another striker in January, because we haven't really replaced...
100%.
We haven't, you know, we lost Batshuayi, who was on loan, and we haven't really replaced that person, that player. So I think this team can push on, and I think we can be top 10. We need to get a striker, like Roy says. We need to probably retain Zaha. Otherwise, if we do lose him, we're going to need to really sort of get replacements, maybe one or two additional replacements instead of Zaha. If Roy's happy to stay on and we can do that, then I certainly, you know, I'm not going to get ahead of myself here. But I think
you never do.
I never do, no. And to be honest with you, you know, I'm happy with what I'm seeing. I'm happy with what he's doing with you know, the tools he's been given. And I think that, you know, personally, from the last couple of seasons, you know, I think if we can push on top 10, then, yeah, that we're going in the right direction.
Look, take it game by game. Let's not look too far ahead. I mean, it's been a good start. And the problem with us is that, can we keep it up consistently? I remember under Alan Pardew, first half of the season until December, end of November, we were around 5th, 6th, and then we hardly won games in the new year. So it's about just taking it game by game, the players keeping focused, but I feel like we could have a decent season and, as you said, finishing the top half.
Well, taking it game by game is the message from DR. James said he's not getting carried away, but it does look very exciting, currently in sixth position. But James is right, goals scored is an issue. Roy wants to add another striker. We're going to be talking about those issues, but who better than to speak to next is Sean Derry, the current Crystal Palace Academy coach.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and DR Kern, as we are talking everything where Crystal Palace is concerned. That brilliant victory away to West Ham on the weekend. There is a feel-good vibe just bubbling under. Well, I say bubbling, that bubble was burst for West Ham, but it's bubbling under for Crystal Palace, that is for sure. And the egos, well, they are starting to soar just that little bit higher. How high can they go? Well, a man who will know a little bit more about that, I'm delighted to say now, Sean Derry has joined us. Sean, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. It's a real pleasure to talk to you, and you always give such a wonderful insight. You're currently the academy coach. We'll get to the kids and how it's going for you, but what have you made of Crystal Palace season so far?
Hi guys, good evening. It's been a fantastic start, hasn't it? You know, it's been a real solid start. I mean, expecting a real tough game, and it presented it to be just out of the weekend at West Ham. So to come away with the 3 points, especially with West Ham starting as they have in their season as well, was brilliant. Absolute brilliant away. And I mean, Palace have shown that, haven't they, over recent years, that their away form has been stunning, really.
Hi, Sean. Last week we were actually talking about the academy and player development. This season, if you look at the summer, hardly any of the under-23s went out on loan. Are there any plans in January to send some of them out on loan just for their development, to help the development?
Of course, you know, that's that's part of the academy system. You know, it's not just here at Crystal Palace, but, you know, up and down the up and down the country with the 23s. The challenge is obviously, you know, the players have got to be performing week in, week out when they get the opportunity to put on the shirt, for whether it's the 23s or whether it's the 18 shirt, to prove that they've got that ability and they've got that opportunity to go out on loan as well. So, but for us as coaches, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, we give them the best possible chance to achieve what their short-term aims are. I mean, it's not going to be the long-term aim, going out on loan, because the long-term aim is hopefully put on that shirt for Crystal Palace in the Premier League.
So what exactly went wrong in summer? I mean, in terms of, I find it quite surprising, to be fair. Normally you would expect to see a couple of them go out on loan, but if you're looking at the outs, and it just seemed like none of them went out on loan. What exactly went wrong?
Well, obviously, you know, I've only just arrived over the past 6 weeks, so it'd be very wrong to me to make a judgment on the recent history. But, I mean, you say, you know, it all went wrong in the summer. I don't think you can just stipulate a success over one window. You know, I don't think you can just say, listen, it's been a success or a failure over one window. I think it's this academy system's not just over 6 months, it's over 3 years probably, from the time that you come out of school into, you know, the first couple of years with the 18s and then the first year into the 23s. So what I would say is when you're thinking about putting young players into an environment where hopefully they're going to go and thrive, you've got to make sure that the blend's right. You've got to make sure it's the right club. You've got to make sure that it's the right manager and it's the right environment for the players to thrive. And sometimes, you know, as much as there was limited activity in the summer, you might get more activity in the January window where, you know, there might be a team that's pushing for the top six, or one that's obviously needs a little bit more of, you know, a few more different faces to escape relegation. So, and that's the difficulty with the 6 month window, as opposed to what it was a couple of years ago when it was just the 1 month. You know, you could go out for 1 month, and it's a different possibility now.
Sean, you mentioned there wasn't much activity. We're looking for that next window, if there is. But what about the next hot crop of youngsters coming through, the next potential talent? You know, we saw it, Wan-Bissaka last year. Where's that next superstar coming from? Please tell us it's in the academy. Who should we watch out for?
Of course, that's a dream, isn't it? You know, to go and see another Wan-Bissaka come through the system. And that's the challenge for us as coaches as well. But like I say, you know, you don't get them every 5 minutes. You know, they do come few and far between. Now, we have got some good young players in the system. You know, like I say, I've only been there for 6 weeks, so I can't honestly give you an absolute in-depth of who's who and what's what. But I can say that, you know, the players that I've worked with over this last 6 weeks, I've got some tremendous ability.
Yeah, hi, Sean, it's James here. I'm interested to know, and I know you haven't been in the club for that long, but obviously as a player, you're at a club for many years, and a couple of times, and I've watched you play, and I've very enjoyed watching you play. I'm interested to know that you say, you know, you just mentioned that you've obviously observed you've got some very good young players there. Do you think Roy is the manager that will allow these young players the opportunity to get onto the pitch, whether it be as a substitute or full-time? Or do you think that they're going to be overlooked unless it's a dire emergency, a bit like the Wan-Bissaka case where we were so injury-prone that we had to play him? And maybe, you know, the best bet for them is, like DR said, they've just got to get out on loan and prove themselves in lower leagues.
Well, look, you know, the Premier League is an unbelievable challenge. It really is. You know, I was fortunate enough to play in there for a couple of seasons myself, so I know just how hard that level is. And when you're Crystal Palace and you've been in there for 6-7 years, you know, to go and blood a young player into that level, it is difficult in itself. Now, Roy's a vastly experienced manager. I mean, guys, you know, we all know the history that he's had, and we know how many games he's managed at various levels. So he knows what he's doing. Very, very much knows what he's doing. And he's always in, you know, dialogue with us, with the younger coaches, and, you know, kind of, obviously because we're on two sites, the Copas Cote Road site and the academy site that's just down the road. And, yeah, you know, he's always interested. He's always at the 23s. I mean, if you was to come down to Sellers Park and see us play, you'll see Roy Hodgson and all the senior management watching every single home game. And they'll always take a lot of interest in what happens away from there as well. So, of course, he's our manager, and he takes loads of interest in the younger players.
You've been, you've been involved in coaching before you come into Palace, of course. What's it like dealing with the academy in compared to managing, for example, the first team? What's the new challenges like for you?
Oh, it's a different challenge altogether. You know, it's of course, you know, it's football day in, day out, and it's great to be on the grass, and it's great to develop and work closely with the players, but as we've seen today, I mean, I think there's been three managers sacked in the last 24 hours. So, you know, the pitfalls of being involved at the first team level and being a manager at the first team level as well. I mean, you know, the tides can turn very quickly over the course of 4 to 6 games. It's, you know, somewhat different with the academy because it is developing young players, and that's a different challenge in itself.
Sean, just very quickly then, Palace are 6, they're riding high. It's been a great start to the season from them. Can they keep this up? What can we expect this year, and what is the general expectation? What can they achieve?
Well, firstly, you know, it's still early days in the season, but it's been a brilliant start, and it gives them a great platform to go forward. You know, coming into the international break on a brilliant performance and obviously a positive 3 points, that should take us really confidently into these next group of games. I've never been one for setting kind of, you know, challenges of where you're going to finish the season, because you know, you guys watch it week in, week out, not just at Crystal Palace, but at various other clubs. You know, the highs and lows of a season can turn from 1 month to the next. So let's just take it slowly, just take it into the next group of games.
Couldn't agree more. Sean, a real pleasure to hear from you tonight. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time, because I know you are extremely busy with that academy. Sean Derry there. Real insight to hear a bit. What he's saying with the kids. He's only been there 6 weeks. Roy Hodgson's always down there. What did you make of that?
I think it's very good. We were talking about it last week, and it's very important for these for our youth to actually develop, because, as I said, I feel like it's a domino effect. When you don't have the under-23s going out on loan, then it prevents the under-18s going up to the under-23. Like, so it's a good message that they're trying to get them out in January, and hopefully more players do go out on loan, because under Roy, I just don't see many of the youth playing unless we have injuries.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I was really nice to learn that Roy and the team go and watch all the matches and the youngsters. So that, for me, was a really positive thing that I got out of that, because, you know, Roy's obviously very busy. He's got to, you know, go and observe other teams for tactics for getting to the next game, and he's got to train the team, and, you know... It's a tough job, apparently, being a Premier League manager. You've got to be all over the country and busy every day. So I'm really impressed with that. And I think Sean was a great servant of Crystal Palace, a good player. And he seems a really nice guy. I've met him in my local high street. I don't know if he's still living there, but yeah, he used to live locally. So he's a lovely guy, and I think he'll do a really good job.
Well, let's hope so. 6 weeks into the job, we're seeing what happens next with the academy. Can they unearth that next star? Well, next, let's talk about a star that they already have. It is a superstar of the first team. We're going to be talking all about Zaha.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and DR Kern, as we were just speaking to Sean Derry. We're really happy with that chat. It was a pleasure, really, for him to give us a little bit of his time. He is the academy coach. He is new to it, 6 weeks in. So just to get that insight was really good. Roy Hodgson there, going to watch those 20 under-23s. A really good chat. We were talking all about that brilliant victory away to West Ham on the weekend. Another away victory in the bank, 3 points earned there. Let's talk, though, because a few storylines have come up this week. Of course it is. It's the man of the moment. It's the man of all moments. It is Wilfried Zaha. This time, a couple of quotes this weekend, or this week, shall I say. One, he said that the transfer speculation at the start of the season mucked up his head. That was down to his poor performances. That's what he was blaming. Now he's getting back into it. And we kind of said this on the show, very worried when it gets back to January how that will affect him there. And also, he tweeted today, he said people want to make up stories or something along that line. He said,
about his agent.
That continues to be a problem. There are always some kind of stories revolving Zaha. What are your thoughts on the latest ones, DR?
I mean, I'm not surprised that his head was all over the place. It's just the fact that he wanted to move on to a bigger club, and I understand that. And it all happened a bit too quickly last week of the transfer window and him putting a transfer request in the last day, basically. So not surprised about that. At least he knows that it affected him and that he has to realise that he has to focus on football rather than actually moving away, because he can't do anything about it right now. But, I mean, you could see it over the last couple of performances that he has put his head down and that he has returned to his old form. Because the best thing that Zaha could do right now is the fact that he could perform and show people that he is worth that price tag that Palace have put on him. And I feel like over the last three games, he has been performing. And with Zaha, there's always going to be media attention. And it's been like this since day one. It's because, first of all, it was that Zaha was a diver. It started from that, and then it just continued from there. There's always constant media attention, and I guess that if you're a player like Zaha and playing at that top level and have interest, it's just an easy clickbait for many media companies to go and target him.
Yeah, I quite agree. And I think over the summer he was ill-advised. I believe he's got rid of his agent since. He was misinformed. There's so much newspaper speculation now about who's bidding what people's values are. None of it is most of it is probably misinformed. So he's thinking, you know, people are bidding £70 million for him, when in fact people are only bidding £50 million. Now, you know, there's not necessarily any evidence of that. So that must be really tricky, because he thinks the club have agreed for him to go at a certain level, which might be 80 million or 70 million. He sees the reports coming to say that, you know, clubs are bidding at that level. However, maybe that isn't necessarily so. So there's a lot of frustration there, because to be fair, he's been at Palace for quite a number of years. And maybe he did want to have an opportunity to play in Champions League or play for a top five club. And he felt that he was being held back. The good news is that he's obviously told this BBC Africa that he's got his head down now. He's happy playing with the team again. He wants to, you know, enjoy his football again. He looks like, I wouldn't say he's back to playing as well as he was last season at this point. Yeah. He hasn't scored any goals this season, and he scored, I think, 10 last season. But he is more focused. He has got his head down. But I think we still need him to really improve a bit more, especially for personal reasons, if he does want to go, because at this present stage, my valuation of him is lower than it was at the end of last season, to be honest.
But wow, okay.
The thing with Zaha is that, yes, he's not scoring goals, but if you actually watch him play, he's actually helped out the defence a lot in terms of grinding back and helping Joe Wood. And the most noticeable game was the Norwich one, where he was just up and down the pitch. And I feel like that is actually helping out the team a lot. So I think he's taking a bit of a sacrifice in terms of going back and not always staying forward to help the better of the team, because we've seen Joe Wood struggle before. And I feel like Joe Wood has actually got the benefit by having Zaha constantly going back and helping him out. And that's one area that people haven't really talked about over this last couple of games, the fact that Zaha has been very good defensively.
Yeah, but I personally think that it's wasted using him defensively. I think, you know, we need to exploit him in the opposition half, and we need to get the best out of him, because he's the one which we all argue in here week in, week out, that we can't unlock defences. Well, he's the player that's going to do it. So how's he going to do that if he's going back covering full-back position?
But there were times, even against West Ham, where he didn't go back and he was up the pitch, and we actually struggled to bring the ball towards him. But when he does go back and help out and win the ball back, the counter-attack is more effective rather than him staying up there, because he's just pushing the ball up the pitch. And sometimes he can get frustrated because he's all the way up the pitch and no one's actually delivering the ball to him. But when he actually goes back and gets involved there and picks up the ball there, then it's just better for the whole team and we look more effective going forward.
Is it a worry that he's saying, you know, obviously the transfer speculation wasn't good for my head. My head was in the shed. Now I'm back on it. I'm getting up to like match fitness, match sharpness. You know, the performances will come. He hasn't scored yet, but he will. Is it worrying that we'll only get to January or we'll only get to next year and then we'll sort of have the saga repeating itself all over again? You know, you don't want to cycle a yo-yo story almost, James.
Well, it might happen again, and we have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But the same. I think the same issues are going to arise. I think the club is going to have a valuation for him, and they're not going to let him go for less than that, especially not halfway through the season.
If it gets, you know, you're saying he's not near that valuation. Mm. What if those performances drop? You can't stick at a valuation if his performances have dropped, and the time it will be running down in his contract. If it gets too close, teams will be like, we'll wait till we can get him on a free, we can approach him in a thing. That's a dangerous, tricky area. We're seeing what Spurs are having with Eriksen. You don't want to get into that bit and then lose any potential transfer money that you could get for Zaha. DR, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. But I feel like with Zaha, there's always going to be speculation when transfer window comes. Even before this window, it was the fact that, oh, Zaha wants to move to Tottenham, and I feel like his agent added fuel to the fire. He has left his agent. It's just, let's just see who comes in to represent him and what approach they use, because the approach his agent used before impacted his reputation. But I mean, in January, I don't think we will, I'm saying this, but you never know, but I don't think we'll lose Zaha in January, because there's actually been claims that someone wants to take over Palace for 210 million. A report came out, I think, last week. So keeping an asset like Zaha would be massive for them, and it'll be more attractive for new owners to come in.
Yeah, historically, under the current climate and regime, we don't like letting players go for less than what we paid for and what we think they're valued. I mean, look at Benteke, you know, near enough 30 million. We've been persevering with him for seasons by season, two or three seasons now. And, you know, they may or may not allow him to go in January for a cut price, 5 million, 10 million, who knows. I think that the club will be reluctant to let Zaha go, even if he is having a poor season, for anything less than what we probably valued him at the end of last season, which a conservative valuation of maybe 70 million.
But if they do let him go, I feel like his valuation is going to drop over the next one or two seasons, because he's 26 turning to 27, so he's at his peak. So if we were to sell him, I mean, it sounds crazy, but now would be the right time to do that, because you'll probably get the most money out of him. So the club have to make a decision there. But it's all a bit confusing now, because there's no real stability going forward. The American owners clearly do want out. And it's just the fact that, what do the owners want? What does Steve Parish want? Because there's the report suggests that he's willing to dilute his stake as well at the club. So, I mean, if you keep Zaha, as I said, you keep a massive asset there, and it makes it more attractive.
And arguably, you could say that we are becoming a more attractive club to stay at, because if we get to January and we are in a position where we are in at the moment, and Roy is allowed to purchase a striker, which is what he's wanted to do since, you know, last year, Wilf might turn around and think, do you know what? This isn't bad, actually, after all. I know this is my club that I enjoy playing with. I know my teammates. I get to play every week. We've now strengthened the team. I'm going to stay here.
Yeah, I agree, and you'd like to think that from fans, but if he wants that European football, if he wants that Champions League, that will trump always knowing the club and knowing his fans. DR, you want to jump
in? Yeah, and I don't think it's only European football and Champions League. It's just playing for a bigger club with better players that are surrounded around him. Maybe he wants that challenge to see that how he would fit like that, because he hasn't had the opportunity to really do that.
He wants to redeem his Man United phase, doesn't he? He wants to show people as well, you know, he's a keen competitor. He wants to show people that he can live up to the expectations.
But then again, you look at Wan-Bissaka. I mean, I know this sounds harsh, but he's in a relegation battle right now with United.
DR throwing shade on Man United.
We're going for Europa League.
Unbelievable. Let's just quickly talk about another incident, because they brought you up on the West Ham show, and it is Zaha, the whole spitting incident. Did you see it? What did you make of it? What did you have to say? DR, I know you saw it.
I mean, it's just foolish to suggest that Zaha tried to spit on Declan Rice. Declan Rice was off the pitch and he was miles away from Zaha when the incident happened. And I feel like with Zaha, I can't remember off my head if I've seen it before, but knowing Zaha as a player and how he gets frustrated, I'm not surprised that he did spit, but he didn't spit at Declan Rice. If you actually look at the video, he spat on the ground. And they had a battle before that, so it was more like, oh, he spat on the ground, and it was like to Declan Rice, all right, let's have it then. Like, let's go again, or whatever, rather than, oh, I'm going to spit on Declan Rice. So I feel like people misinterpreted the whole spitting thing. And if you look at the wider angle, Declan Rice is hardly even in the shot when Zaha spits on the ground. So it's just nonsense.
Two words, bad losers.
I don't think they were. I think they said Crystal Palace were worth it, but they brought it up.
They weren't, but in terms of West Ham fans in general on social media, they haven't stopped about it. I mean, we didn't play great, I understand that, but they've always had this agenda against Wilfried Zaha. I remember a couple seasons ago.
He does come in for a lot of stick.
Yeah, I remember a couple seasons ago at Selhurst Park, they were singing, you can't play for England or something along them lines, and then he goes and scores. Like, they've always disliked Zaha for whatever reason. They think he's overrated. But, I mean, you can't say that he spat on someone. You know, that's just too much. The allegations, you look at the video, there's nothing like that.
Well, there you have it. DR has put the story to bed. There was no spitting incidents. Declan Rice was miles away from Zaha when he done it. He didn't need to do that. They did get the 3 points on the weekend. We're delighted to say that next we will be talking to Nick Gillard. And let's say he's not the biggest fan of VAR, but maybe was he on the weekend?
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with a very happy James Howard and DR Kernas from the Back of the Nest podcast. And there is still time to get in touch this evening. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 7020 558. You can also WhatsApp on the same number. But this is the Crystal Palace Fan Show. This is the Back of the Nest podcast. It would not be complete if we didn't hear from Nick Gillard and all he had to say on the weekend. Now, Nick, you're not the biggest fan of VAR. You say it ruins it for the paying punter, that moment of euphoria. But I'm guessing that then by that statement, you wasn't celebrating that winner when that decision got overturned.
Hello, everybody. I hate it. I really do. I was watching it on telly and they were getting rulers out, or electronic rulers. It's ridiculous. I thought the linesman wasn't meant to put his flag up and just wait and see what the VAR did. So it felt like a disallowed goal that was corrected rather than the goal being given or not given, if that makes sense. I think it's the rule more than the VAR, but just watching the players standing round wondering what was going on. All those poor people would have paid 30, 40 quid to go and watch a game. It's not showing what's going on with the VAR on the screens in the ground. It's just showing VAR review. We might as well have a game of Pac-Man on our phones while we're waiting, you know, for the uses. And I still don't like it, even though we benefited, because there'll be other games when we don't.
Nick, I completely agree. It's completely different for the paying punter in the stadium. But surely, I'm fair play to you, you're standing by your claims. You still don't like it. But this could have been 1 point for Crystal Palace. It turned into three. We don't know how vital that extra 2 points are at the end of the season. Surely, this is what VAR was brought in for. You know, justice has been served. Surely, you've got to be delighted with that. This has worked in Crystal Palace's favour.
Yeah, but it could have just easily not worked. You know, I mean, I think the rule needs to change with the offside because it's so exact now. It's just ridiculous, Charlie. It really, really is. We'll get decisions for us. We'll get decisions against us, whether there's VAR or not. Swings and roundabouts. It balances out. But I still maintain TV stations are there to broadcast football matches, not dictate how the games run. And we're going too far that way, and I was worried that a few people would be converted by VAR just because we had a good decision, but it doesn't take away the fact that it's rubbish.
But Nick, it's only 8 games played. It's not like we've had VAR for 5 years and it's the same thing. It's 8 games played. I'm pretty sure they'll review it after the season's done and see where they can improve on. VAR doesn't work all around the world the same way. In Turkey, the referee actually goes to the screen to see the decision himself. So, I mean, it will change over time. As you said, it'll go against us as well.
Then what's that all about? Different rules in different countries. What does that mean? You have a different rule for VAR if you're playing in the Champions League than you have a rule for VAR if you're playing in the Premier League.
It's not really a rule. It's just the referee goes and sees the decision himself on the TV rather than VAR making the decision on his behalf. I mean, things will improve. Over time, things will improve. But I want to talk to you about Vicente Gaita, because in the first half, I thought it was pretty compact. But when they did have the chances, Vicente came up big and he saved us big time. What have you made of him so far this season?
He's got excellent reflexes, hasn't he? I mean, how he stopped that one in the first half. All right, the ball seemed to come at him, but he still had to put his right hand out to the right a bit to actually block it. And the strength he must have in his wrists to actually stop a ball like that, because it was really hurling at him, wasn't it?
Yeah, hi Nick. I didn't think he got much credit for that save, actually.
No, because the VAR took away everything else from the game. Nobody's talking about the game, they're talking about the VAR. I watched a West Ham video thing, and they were talking about, they kind of agreed that Palace should have had the goal, but they didn't like it. No, I don't know anybody that likes it, genuinely.
I like it.
And the more people I talk to who said they liked it at the start, don't like it anymore.
Yeah,
get rid.
Are those fans that where VAR's gone against them? Because I know you're saying, oh, we're going to have it go against us, but it will only go against you if it believes you are wrong. I mean, if that happened to West Ham and we're saying, you know, the goal was onside and they got the 2-1 win, it was onside. So it's not going against you. It's just upholding the rules there, Nick.
All you're doing is moving the interpretation of what happened to somebody else. You're taking it away from the ref and to a bloke watching it on telly somewhere up north or in the Midlands somewhere. They're still up for interpretation. Who knows whether they're going to get it right? They're going to make mistakes. But there's still going to be mistakes.
But
it's
I'll
just a different
Nick,
person doing it.
Most of the decisions, I don't think, really are overturned. It's just the least offside decisions that are overturned because it's factual.
Yeah.
So I'm for it. I think that quite a lot of people are actually for it, to be honest with you. But maybe, you know, people are more inclined to sort of say something when they, you know, because of the change and they're not happy with it. Whereas people that are happy with it just keep quiet and just think, yeah, I'm happy with this and just go with the flow. I think it needs to improve. I do agree with you that it probably we need to get into a stage where the it's displayed on the big screen at the grounds, you know, actually what they're looking at. That would help.
I thought it was originally brought in, the whole idea behind it was to sort of overturn howling errors, like the wrong player being sent off or somebody being ridiculously offside and it not given. Not millimetres offside. I mean, I know that's the rule, but it's...
It was spent to overturn clear and obvious error, wasn't it? I understand that was why it was brought in. Nick, we could obviously talk about VAR all day, but it was 3 points. It was 2-1. It was a brilliant away win. Palace is sitting there in six, you know, same points as another top four team. You've got to be feeling good about this start to the season, Nick. Let's talk about the game and the start of the season you've made. How happy are you with how it stands going into this second international break?
Well, considering I don't think we've been playing that well for half of the games, I'm very, very happy that we're going into the next five games and every game is a six-pointer.
Yeah.
When you say, what do you mean, Nick, six-pointer? What would you mean by that?
Well, when you're near the end of the season, you're in a relegation zone and you're playing one of the teams around you, it's seen as a six-pointer because you're moving, you know, you're making a gap of potentially 6 points away from the other team. So you can still have that at the top of the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks' time, we could be sitting top of the league. Of course it won't happen. Of course we're going to be on the receiving end of a Man City thumping simply because they got turned over by Wolves. But it is what it is. I don't think we're going to go down now. I think we're going to easily reach the 40-point mark that we're looking for. And to avoid relegation by January, February, that would be a vast improvement on previous seasons. And then, you know, we might push for Europe a little bit. But it'll be nice not looking behind us and worrying and just have a season of mid-table mediocrity.
I tend to agree with you, Nick, that we maybe haven't played as well as, you know, the results are sort of showing. But and I'm a bit worried because we have got some really tough fixtures coming up, haven't we? So I think we're going to have, I think, you know, give it, I'd like to have this, obviously we will have this conversation in 6 weeks or so time. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we were in the bottom half in 6 or 7 weeks time. But then again, you know, vice versa, you know, if we carry on as we are and we pick up the odd surprise here or there, then we could still maintain sort of, you know, top 10. But you're right. Personally, I think that we are so desperate for a striker that, you know, if we don't get one in January, like Roy says, then we're just really going to be possibly struggling.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. But then he's doing all right. We could do with him being a little bit quicker. But the sheer effort he puts in and the fact that he's willing. I mean, look at Benteke when he came on. He was on for 3 minutes, he was offside and then got booked.
Yeah, I don't know why he's still coming on, actually. I thought he'd given up on him as a substitute.
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe he's got a playing calls when he's fit. Can I just mention the marathon, Mark? She's on Saturday.
Yeah.
So we've got loads and loads of Crystal Palace fans walking around South London to Trafalgar Square. So can I wish everybody who's doing that good luck? And I'm sorry I can't be with you this year. But if you go to backofthenest.com, I think there's details on there of how you can raise some money, because we've still got about 1,200 quid we need to raise.
Well, hopefully we'll raise it. Definitely visit that page, check it out, anything you can do. We wish everyone good luck with that marathon on the weekend. Nick, thank you so much for joining you. Hopefully we'll get to see you back in the studio next week. Nick Gillard there talking everything about the Eagles from the Back of the Nest podcast. Always a pleasure to speak to Nick. It won't be the show if we didn't get to hear his views. Yeah. Not happy with VAR, but the voice in the studio, you two, is saying that you're pleased with VAR, and not just because it went Palace's way this weekend.
I mean, look, I'm pleased with VAR because I understand why it's there. I've said it from day one, because I watched the NBA, and even in the NBA there is a similar type of where the referees go and watch replays from decisions in the last 2 minutes, and not every decision is correct. It depends on how you interpret it, and that's why I feel like it adds a bit of drama. That was drama there. Like
I do agree. Like,
it was the 88th minute, and I was watching the game, and I was like, what is going on? What is going on? And it just added a bit more, like, bust to the actual celebration, because I was like, yes, yes, like, it's gone for us.
Exactly. In the outside perspective, I'm not a Palace fan, and I'm watching, I'm like, what are they giving it? Are they not giving it? People say, oh, the moment of euphoria is taken away, but there's more moments added in, because you're waiting there, and everyone is literally waiting on this one decision. For the home fans and away fans, it's either joy or despair, isn't it, James?
Yeah, I was just about to say, added to the excitement, because, in fact, you could argue that there was more of a cheer from the VAR decision than there was, you know, when there was a goal.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, I think the...
Because you know you've won it then, don't you?
It's absolutely huge. And the TV panned to the crowd, and I think there was a
brilliant
section with Palace fans and West Ham fans, and the West Ham fans were absolutely gutted and really sort of throwing their fists in the air. But the Palace fans were just a jubilant.
Very, very quickly, I went to ask, when Van Aanholt scored that penalty, was he doing the hammers to rub it in, or was that his own celebration?
He does that. I don't know where.
Because I was like, whoa.
Talking about Van Aanholt, I was like, my heart was sinking when he actually stepped up to take the penalty, because he hasn't had the greatest start of the season, and it's good for him to score it.
We all got excited just at the end of the show, but we have come to the end of the show. This has been the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Lost Book Radio with the Back of the Nest podcast, James Howard and DR Connors. You can catch it next Tuesday, 8 till 9 every week on Lost Book Radio. Next up, though, it is QPR.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.